Welcome to WeAreTechnology.com's User Friendly 2.0 with host Bill Sickens, Technology Architect.
And this is User Friendly 2.0. I'm your host, Bill Sickens. Joining me, Gretchen and Bill. Welcome to the show.
Hello there.
Howdy.
So we've got a little bit of listener feedback that I need to change the way I intro this show since I've done it the same way for 10 years. And you know what? Change is good sometimes. So I'm going to have to think about that.
But so everybody's right now, bored?
I don't know if everybody's bored, but I'm getting teased. So
okay.
I was asked if that was a recording or that we kind of took as part of the intro now. Or it's not. We're doing it live. It's just the same script. But yeah, so, you know, up and coming here, talking about such things. We've got a great guest for you today, Bob Lament with Static Radio. He was on before and is joining us again. And we've gotten a lot of questions for him. So we are going to probably be putting him on the hot seat in a month or two down the road. So keep them coming in, userfriendly.show. This week, we're going to be talking about streaming media, next-gen television, and his take on cable services. Remember those, you know, from back in the Middle Ages? Well, they're still around, but not a lot of people use them anymore. But hey, you know what? Some do. So we're going to see where that's going and what's up with that. Next week, we're going to have a very interesting topic. We're going to be talking about jetpacks. And the reason we're doing that is the two people from Gravity, which is a company that makes these things, yes, they are an actual thing, are going to be coming on the show in April, and they just did their first ever jetpack race. So we're going to have the winner of the race and another guest who are going to be talking about what it was like to do that. So I have to say, I'm a little bit jealous. Maybe I'm going to figure out a way to weasel my way into that. We'll see. But that's up and coming. So kind of a cool thing. You know, we were supposed to have jetpacks by the year 2000, and we didn't, but I do believe that this is something that is better late than never, especially since it's during my lifetime. So I don't know. Would you guys be willing to try a jetpack?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm not feeling any negative pushback on that. So, well, let's see what happens here. And it'll be really cool. Any way you look at it, the company seems to be amazing. They've got a lot of resources for STEM, for education and that type of thing, too, which I really like. And it's going to be very interesting to see the actual side of this kind of a technology. All right, what do we have in the news this week?
Be careful of that unsubscribe button.
Yeah, interesting thing. This has been something that, you know, most of us have seen in emails. If you get on a list or something like that and you want to get off of it, there was legislation passed a few years ago that required companies to give you a way to unsubscribe. So at the bottom of the email, usually in a very small 2-point microscopic font in a way that you can't really read it very well, there's a little tiny button that says unsubscribe. And then when you click on it, you go to this site that, are you sure you want to unsubscribe? And then it will try to talk you out of it. And then you can finally do it. That's the legitimate way. But the bad guys are catching on to this and are trying to use this as a way to steal your identity or send you malware. So you'll get an email that you clearly don't want. And at the bottom of it, you have the unsubscribe button. The only problem is when you click on it, it confirms that your email address is good. And if it does send you to a site, they might be able to get some of your personal information because you think you're trying to unsubscribe from the list. So what do you do? I mean, you know, these things are getting a little bit more prevalent now and you still want to be able to unsubscribe. Well, most email software, Yahoo, Gmail, and so on, have a way to block inbound email. But the thing of it is the bad guys are probably going to use a different email address the next time they send it out. But it is one way to do it. The other thing you can do is mouse over, but not click on the unsubscribe link. And it'll pop up a little thing above it that will tell you where that link actually goes. This actually works for pretty much everything. And if you're trying to unsubscribe from something, let's say on Amazon, but the link that pops up is some weird number followed by some weird extension that has nothing to do with Amazon, it's probably a pretty good clue that that's not a real link. And you don't want to click on it. So just another thing to be aware of. And one thing that I have seen on Gmail, and I think some of the other ones are doing it, is for the legitimate ones. If you get a bunch of stuff in and you don't open it, it'll actually eventually pop up a thing. Do you want to unsubscribe from so-and-so? And if that's coming from Gmail, then you can go ahead and do it that way. But again, mouse over, see where that link actually goes. And if it's not where it's supposed to go, or if it feels off, probably shouldn't click on it.
Google's podcasts is gone.
Yeah, so a little bit of a bummer. And if you listen to our shows on Google Podcasts, I can guarantee you that you're not listening to this week's show there because it is no more. And what they're doing is rolling this into YouTube Music, where they're trying to get everything to come from the same place. But at the end of the day, this is another service. And, you know, it's interesting. There's only two companies out there that I have seen that seem to do this. I'm sure there's others, but it seems like Sony and Google. And on the PlayStation, we've seen a lot of services where they've started it up. It's been the greatest thing since sliced bread. And they kind of forget about it's there. And then they finally stop doing it. And, you know,
it's Google weird. Yeah. Is,
yeah. I don't know. Do you remember Google Social Network?
Yes. Google Plus.
Yeah. There's a whole bunch of things like
really
that.
It was really pretty.
Yeah, it was pretty, but it didn't do much. But
yeah,
it's actually, you know, actually that lives on too under the name Currents, and it's something that's available to commercial subscribers for like Workspace. But my understanding is we're going to be seeing the end of that soon too. And I can kind of understand why, because as far as I know, nobody uses it anyway.
Mm. New Star Wars series canceled just months before premiere. So what's going on with that?
So, Gretchen, let's see. Do you know the series, the name of it?
Yeah, it's The Acolyte.
Yeah, The Acolyte. And not something that you'd have to make a real wild guess on, but there's been a lot of rumors going on about this. And so I got to check into it a little bit and spoke to some that are in the know, or at least claim to be, to see what is actually the situation here. And this premieres June 4th, I believe, on Disney Plus. And they have not canceled the first season. It's still going to air. But according to Industrial Light and Magic, this was definitely pitched as a multi-season show. So the question that's really coming up here is the second season going to go? Now, at the end of the day, and there's a lot of rumors swirling that it's everything from a problem with Kathleen Kennedy to some of the participants in the cast to the phase of the moon. But at the end of the day, I think what's really going to make the determination is, will this make money? Because that's what this kind of all comes down to. And if the series is good and the fans like it and they're able to work around these problems, I don't know how to work around Kathleen Kennedy, but if you were able to work around some of the problems that are curable, then we might still see a second season of it. It's just going to end up where it is. Now, I, of course, never express my opinion in the news, so I'm not saying anything negative about Kathleen Kennedy. anyway.
Really?
No, not really.
you know, the thing is this all makes sense because I've seen the Black Series toys, the 6-inch figures that I like to collect,
right,
already coming out for it. So why would they cancel it?
Yeah.
You know, when they already have the toys out, you know?
The thing is, a lot of the decisions that are made on this are not really about what you would think. It's behind the camera stuff. There's some kind of a problem that is completely unrelated to the series or the story, or, you know, whatever the case may be, that can cause.
It's kind of like the Cara Dune thing, you know?
Exactly.
It has nothing to do with The Mandalorian. It has to do with something else.
Yeah. Like politics, you know, but there's other things too. I mean, you know, just a little aside to this, if you remember Star Trek Deep Space Nine, the character Quark, this is something that came up that Ferengi, if you don't know Star Trek, just advance here because this won't make sense. But if you do, the species Ferengi usually wear a certain kind of costuming, which includes a thing around the back of their neck, and he doesn't. And people were asking the question, well, you know, why is it? Is this some different Ferengi religion? No, it's easier to shoot that way and do the costuming. So he's a frontline character, starring character. So instead of having to fight with that, they just decided to do away with it. Now, that's completely unrelated to anything to do with the Star Trek universe, but it's the real reason behind that. And this plays out in a lot of different things where you're thinking, oh, you know, this would make sense. No, and if you hear the real problem, it probably doesn't make sense, at least not in the way you would think.
Yeah. Be careful of buyer scams on eBay.
Yeah, so this is one. If you've ever seen these commercials, has this ever happened to you? Well, this almost happened to me. I didn't get screwed, but I wanted to put this out there because something that I ran into, and it's something to be concerned about. Is that, you know, the bad guys will try to get you coming and going. And I've been on eBay since 1999 in the dark ages of the internet and have had the same account since then. And over the years, I've bought and sold a number of things. It's a good way to be able to sell electronics that I don't need anymore and somebody else can use, and, you know, buy some obscure things if I want to find it. And Weird Al calls this a worldwide garage sale, and it basically is, but it's kind of a fun one. And, you know, garage sales are kind of fun too. But here's what I ran into. I had an item up that I was selling. It was a piece of telephone equipment, and I was selling it for $400. And somebody bought it and paid and all of that. So great, here we are, good to go. And the way that eBay works is it generates a mailing label for you, and then you send it out, and then it takes care of the tracking information, and that's how it verifies that the buyer got the item. So about a week into this, I get a message back from UPS saying, well, we couldn't deliver the package, it's being returned, the address is no good. The person had moved, or the house had, you know, been moved to Mars or something, and the address didn't work. So package comes back, and about a day before I received it, I get a message through, a direct message through eBay from the buyer saying, hey, sorry about that. I'll take care of the postage, but let me give you the correct address. And I'm like, okay, great. Gives me the address. And then I started thinking about this, and it just felt like something was a little bit off. So when the package came back, I checked it out. Everything was fine, and it actually hadn't been delivered or opened or anything like that. So I checked with eBay, and apparently if you send a package out to a buyer, but it's an address different from the one in their eBay account, that may not count. And what can happen is you send the item off, and then the buyer goes, well, I never received it. Now I've got this other tracking code. Well, it doesn't matter. So just something to be careful of. Like I say, they'll get you coming and going. And this was a situation that I almost was out $400. It's very easy to have these things happen, and I'm glad I caught it. So what I ended up doing was just putting it back up, and I refunded the scammer his money, and just sold it again. All right. So, you know, but again, it's just something you don't want to be out that, and just be careful out there.
You might want to disable journal suggestions on your iPhone.
Interesting little app. This came out. So what journals is on the iPhone is it's a way of keeping a journal. The name kind of matches, right? And what it is you set this up and you can basically write like you would for a diary or something of that nature. And this is actually a report that came out of CNET, and a reporter tried it out, used it once, and decided he didn't want to use it anymore. Well, the only thing of it is it starts giving you suggestions on things to write about. And here this starts coming up with, you had a dental appointment yesterday. Why don't you write about your dental appointment? So, and this is where you were and all this kind of stuff. Well, the app has access, you accept the permissions to your contact list, your GPS location information, and your calendar. Okay. So, you know, this kind of thing is just something you might not think about.
Right, about your date with Betty.
Yeah, exactly. You know, and that's the whole thing. There might be some stuff that you don't want to automatically have in your journal. Not that saying anybody ever has a private life anymore with the internet, but somebody might, hopefully. So, but at the end of the day, it's just something to be aware of. And if you're not using it, it might be a good idea to shut it off or uninstall it. Now, Android has a similar thing, and it's done through Google Maps. And I have mine switched on. I don't mind using it. But at the end of the month, I get this, this is what you did last month thing. And you can go to every day, and it shows you where you went, how long it took to get there, whether you were driving, or in my case, sometimes flying or walking or whatever, and how long you were there and what happened when you left. And then it prompts you to, you know, is this the right location? And, you know, same kind of thing. But again, it has access to your location information, your calendar, and so on to be able to do that. And if you want it to, great. But if you're not aware that it's recording this information, it's something that could be a little bit of a concern. And best thing to do with that is also go ahead and turn that off in Google Maps. But, you know, none of these are like malware apps or anything like that. But it is important that when you install software, especially on a mobile device, and you just go through and accept the permissions, to actually maybe look at what the permissions are that it's accepting. I remember one time a few years ago, I got this app, and I did just that, like most of us do. I just installed it and didn't really check it out. The next thing I know, I'm having advertisements as my wallpaper on the phone.
Oh, geez.
And I look at it and, well, you accepted this permission. And I had.
I don't like stuff like that.
No, it was irritating. Now, fortunately, I was able to uninstall it, but, you know, and it did go away. And that is one thing on the mobile devices is usually you can do that. Oh, but there's malware and viruses and everything else. So it's just something to be careful about. But yeah, just take a moment and see what you're doing when you accept the permissions and that there isn't something real weird, you know, like the old commercial. Is it normal to get free fries when you give your social security number to somebody on the phone? No, it's not. And, you know, so same type of thing with this. Just check it out. Make sure you know what it's doing and you want it to be able to do whatever it purports to do.
Intel shares fall after company reveals $7 billion operating loss in foundry business.
So, you know, this, if this happened to me, I'd be upset. If it happens to Intel, they don't, I'm sure that somebody is unhappy about this, you know, to make the comment. But hey, you know, it's just $7 billion. So what it is Intel is a chip manufacturer. The foundry part of manufacturing microchips is where they physically fabricate the actual silicon and, you know, put everything together. AMD and NVIDIA and a lot of other companies design things here in the United States, but actually manufacture them in Asian countries. Intel, on the other hand, does their stuff for the most part in the United States. Here in Oregon, we have in what they call Silicon Forest, places where this is actually done. So what they're looking to do is, I do think at the end of the day, as sarcastic as I might have been, losing $7 billion is probably a bad thing, whoever you are. So what they want to do is look at being the foundry for other companies, just like the ones that may send stuff out to Asia and being able to manufacture microchips for Intel and then also non-Intel things. And they expect this to normalize within the next year or two and hopefully show a profit after that. But I hope they're able to get there because having stuff made domestically, especially after that big grant that they just got, it'd be kind of nice to have all of this stuff, you know, local, at least a little bit.
Agreed. Gmail is 20 years old, and some people are still making the same mistakes they did at launch. So what is this?
Gmail, 20 years, okay, so 2004. I have to say that's making me feel a little old because I remember when this launched. And in that era with Google, everything was beta for like years too. So it was Gmail beta. I remember that and came out and this whole thing and it's like, okay, well, you know, it works well. And it kind of knocked Yahoo Mail and some of these other things, Outlook from Microsoft off the top. But you still got to log on to this. And there are still many people that are using passwords that are way too simple, like, oh, password or 12345 or something of that nature.
Okay. Don't they know by now?
Well, I have to say, this isn't limited. I'm not going to call them out, but one of our clients was doing this with their merchant login. It was password. It was literally the word password. And I'm kind of like, you know, as a programmer, I have to change this. You know, you just got to understand that I'm usually pretty customer service focused, but this is one thing I'm not asking. But here's the issue with this on email. The spammers tend to use unprotected accounts to send their spam and then they delete it. So if you have an account that is easy to compromise because the password's too weak, you can have the bad guy log in, send a whole bunch of stuff from your account that I won't use the word on the air that I would think of that is, that you don't want to, and then they delete it from the sent items and you don't know that it actually went out and they have access to your stuff. So it's not even an identity theft thing on your side. It's them wanting to be able to use those services. So it's important to have more secure passwords. Now, in a perfect world where we were all cyborgs, we could have just, you know, 15, 20 digit random codes. But this isn't the perfect world. We're not all cyborgs. So the best way to deal with that is to maybe take two or three words and run them together with a number in between. Something that you'll remember, but that is a lot harder to just guess, certainly than the word password or even something simple. So something to check out, if you're still using the word password, one, don't admit to it, and two, change your password.
The American mall is dying. What comes next?
Yeah, so, you know, this is something we'll dig into. I've been working a little bit with one of the many dead mall shows on YouTube, which is interesting to see where this is going. But Westfield, which was a big, big owner of many malls across the country, has pulled out of the United States.
Really?
And yeah, you'd have this Westfield Shopping Town wherever, which was usually the original name of the mall before they bought it.
Really? So yep. It's pulled out of the United States. Where did it come from?
The company is international.
Oh, I didn't know that.
And malls in Europe and other places are doing just fine. It's a phenomenon here. But, you know, and a lot of stuff led into this. And, you know, we talk about pop culture, and during the 80s and even the 90s, going to the mall was a big deal. I remember that growing up, and you went in and your parents did their shopping. You went and played your video games,
Had
lunch at the food court. And the last mall I was in, there was literally nothing in the food court. I mean, literally nothing. So
was that one of the dead ones?
Yes, it was. But at the end of the day, you're seeing this in a lot of places too, that are good spots for shopping, that it's just something that's going away. And there's a couple of reasons for this. The online changes in technology, all that kind of stuff does play into it. But if that really was the only reason, they wouldn't be still successful in Europe and other places. The other part is, it seems like a lot of the mall companies went minimalist in the early 2000s. So where you had a cool place to hang out, and conversation pits and fountains, and you could smell the pretzels cooking. Well, that all was, that's very 70s and 80s. So we're going to take all of that out and paint it beige or something. This has literally happened.
So all the cool stuff went away. Like the
cool
fountains.
Stuff went away. And then coupled with the fact that they got hit with a perfect storm of Sears going out, and a lot of these other companies that had the anchor stores, it's just kind of built up to create this situation. There's no reason to go there other than the shopping. So now the shopping's gone, and you end up with a situation that is a lot of changes coming. So what's next? What's going to happen? Because we've got a lot of these facilities, and something like only about 25% of them actually get repurposed into something else. Usually they're torn down. And what they're doing is, in a lot of cases where they're being successful, is actually adding things like housing or other things that you wouldn't think of normally being in a mall. So now you live over where you shop. For me, that could be quite dangerous, but it does seem to work in certain situations. The other thing that seems to be happening to a lot of them is they're being converted into Amazon warehouses. So still shopping, but just for a little different way. But some of these places are downright creepy. They get abandoned, and what ends up happening is they're really just left to sit, and you start having situations like the floor collapses into the flooded basement and all of those different type of things. I've even heard rumors that, you know, aliens are invading, maybe not, but it is definitely something where they can get quite dangerous. You get squatters, you get people in that vandalize and all that kind of stuff. And the other part of it is that for people that go into these buildings, there's no law enforcement at all. You know, it is a very dangerous place. You get hurt or something like that, then you are going to be in trouble. A lot of times they don't come in. All right. Well, stick with us. We've got a great interview coming up after the break. This is User Friendly 2.0. We'll be right back. Welcome back. This is User Friendly 2.0. We're going to jump to our guest here in just a moment, and we're going to be talking a little bit about the demise of cable television today. Interesting topic, something that we do get a lot of questions on, and I don't know how many people still subscribe to like a Dish Network or terrestrial cable where you have the box and everything, you know, but it seems like it's definitely not as much as it used to be with internet television services. And something, you know, that is just a topic of if it's still out there. So before we go to the interview, I'm going to ask everybody, if you still do use regular cable television, we'd love to hear from you. Userfriendly.show. Let us know what you think of it and if you're considering switching or not and why you prefer it. Anyway, with that, let's go to our interview. This will be Bob Lament, host of Static Radio. Bob, welcome back to User Friendly.
Hey, how you doing today?
Good. And yourself, what's new and exciting?
Oh, you know, just the usual, but I've been pondering streaming media services here lately because of, I guess because a lot of new shows have come out recently, possibly. I don't know.
Well, I can tell you one thing from some of the questions we've been getting in, you're not alone in pondering that. You know, and this is such a broad topic. So just to find a place to dive in, and it seems to be a focus. Do you think there's too many streaming media services? Let's just start there.
I think there's, well, yeah, I think there's too many, but I think kind of my, where my mind was going was the fact that it, they've usurped any kind of traditional broadcast television at this point. There is absolutely no reason to have broadcast television or cable television, I think, at this point.
You know, I kind of would have to agree going down that road, certainly with cable television.
You hesitated.
Yeah, I was just thinking about the statement you were making there, but then it's like, I don't know if I have an opposing viewpoint. Now, broadcast television, the argument could be that you can still get it for free. So, that, yeah. But there's a lot of free streaming services, too, when it comes down to it.
Yeah, there's a lot. I mean, Pluto TV is a big free streamer that has a ton of content. What is it? Was it Tubio? What's it called? Tubio?
Tubio, yeah.
But anyway, there's a bunch of them that are free ones out there. But yeah, I think, though, I just happened to be thinking about this because of the Super Bowl happened recently. And I don't know that this happened last year or not, because I wasn't really paying that close of attention. But you could watch it on a streaming service this year. And I don't think you could last year. And
you know, I'm trying to remember. I don't think you could either. I know they did it this year, and I think this was the first time. I might not be accurate on that, but that's what I remember.
And so I thought, wait a minute, because that was the big holdout, right? You know, the Oscars, the Super Bowl, the World Series, all these mega live events were the holdout for broadcast television. And now they've pretty much all flipped over. You can watch the Oscars, I think, on Hulu and Disney and someplace else. I mean, there's basically nothing now that you can't really watch, at least on some streaming service. It may not be the one you have, but some streaming service is going to have what you want, more than likely. And Amazon and Netflix and I think Disney are all doing a big push to do more live events, so sporting events and HBO Max especially. Live sporting type events and live events. And that was kind of the last holdout, I think. And so I think with that turn this year with the Super Bowl, I mean, is there a reason other than, yes, there is free stuff, right? But now I look at those as they also ran, just like we've taken a turn over the last few years to where most people, regular average everyday people, listen to podcasts rather than listening to the radio. Now,
do the same thing with television. Yeah. And yeah, I was just going to comment on that, because that really has been a transition that has happened. And that is really the case. And, you know, we're on air still. But the thing of it is I know the majority of our listeners listen online. And it's the same thing with me. Even for music, I mean, you don't put the radio on, you stream something.
Right, you go to one of the services, right? So iHeartRadio, Spotify, Pandora, one of these things. And so I think, you know, we could say, I think successfully, the 2020s are going to be known as the transition from traditional media to the new traditional media. So this is the new traditional media, right? This is, we can just call it that. And I think over the course of the last 4 years, I mean, that really has completed the turn. There was obviously, everything's been happening for quite some time, but I think this is where you have, you know, your average user is going to those sources now rather than going to a different source.
You know, even when you talk about free over-the-air television, I'm just thinking about this a little more as we're discussing it. And that takes a little bit of doing, because you can't really just set up a television and get the channel. You have to have an antenna that's going to be outside, or it won't receive anything and all of that. So you're still doing a lot of stuff to be able to get that to work. And by the time you do that, it's probably just easier to get the service. Plus, local news broadcasts, most television stations have a Fire TV app or whatever they're using that you can install, and you can get a better picture than you would over the air. So.
Yeah.
So do you think by the end of the decade, we're not going to see broadcast television at all anymore?
No, I think we'll still see it. And we're just like we still have traditional radio stations. We're still going to see it, but it's going to be, it's not going to be the premiere, right? It's not going to be on the front edge of things. It's going to be on the sliding back on things. And so I think the front edge of things now is going to be streaming, whereas before, you know, they're kind of grappling for content and so forth. Now, if you're going to have any content to be produced, it's going to be on that front edge rather than being on the other, just because of the nature of that's where everybody's at. You know, that's what happens is everybody kind of shifts over, and then that's where things start happening. And it'll be interesting to see where it goes. I mean, I think, you know, well, you would know that whenever we switched over from analog to digital television signals, they gave everybody extra channels, right? So instead of just having one channel, you got three channels, right? I think was the deal. And, but they can't keep up. I mean, look at Pluto TV. There's probably, I don't even know how many channels there are when you go to Pluto TV and just can flip through and it's live streaming all this content, you know, 24/7. It's just amazing the amounts of content that are available on free streaming platforms, let alone the paid platforms. But you know, they always create a hierarchy, right? So then now everything is going to move from the pay platforms down to the free platforms, depending on, you know, who's financing it and so forth. I saw an ad the other day that Ubisoft made a show. I can't remember the name of the show, but they're a game company, right? And they're making a television type show. And I was like, that's very interesting.
It doesn't shock me. I hadn't heard that. I'm just trying to put that together a little bit. But yeah, it does give a lot more access. And you're talking about, you know, getting more channels and all that kind of stuff. And mm-hmm. broadcast television, certainly cable, you're limited by the bandwidth. So you can mm-hmm. only fit so much on there. And on the internet, streaming services or over the top services, you're just getting what you're watching. They don't have to transmit everything on every channel to your computer. So right. it allows you to basically have an infinite number of channels, if you will, mm-hmm. without a problem. And I could see going that direction. The technology, there's a lot more access too for different people producing different things that you wouldn't have gotten because of the finite amount of airtime. And, right. you know, the other side of this that you mentioned, which is cable television, I don't know if we're going to see that for too much longer, because right. it does seem like that's something that is really becoming obsolete.
Right. They're going to become your, you know, ISP. They're going to become your internet provider because they have the infrastructure for it, and they have the ability to deliver high speed internet to your door pretty easily. Right. And effectively. And so I think they're going to transition, although I don't know if you've played around with it, but there's cellular high-speed internet, and it works pretty well.
Yeah, the cellular 5G works as long as you have a strong signal. That seems to be the only Achilles heel that has. And then the other thing that you're starting to see more of is services like Starlink satellite. That's low latency, no latency connections.
Right.
It's also wireless. You know.
Mm-hmm.
So going in that direction, and the other thing that you got to consider too is the terrestrial upkeep. So like you say, the cable service is already there. They can deliver the connection because they've got the infrastructure to do it. But maintaining the wires and everything, at some point, that probably will exceed the value of what they're doing, especially when you can get it without all of that,
mm-hmm.
You know, and going in that direction. Now, I've seen a lot of the cable companies, especially out here, are trying to sell mobile phone services and stuff.
Right.
But from what I've seen, I don't think they actually provide it. It's piggybacked on something else. So it's not even their product, you know?
Right. They're because I think all the services, at least on the phone side of things, have to have a ability for somebody else to provide through their network. I think that's mandated by the government. So, you know, you could have Bill's phone service if you wanted to pay the fees necessary to set all that up. And they would have to oblige. Right. But I don't know. So the interesting thing is what will broadcast television become, because they have to pivot. This is the beginning of their need to pivot, right? So they have to think of whatever they're going to do next, just like the cable companies are trying to pivot into being internet service providers and like you said, cell phone providers at this point. You know, what is going to happen with that? Because they're not going to get the premier events, you know, it's not going to be exclusive to them like it used to be, right? And the interesting thing to me, though, is what happens with this plethora of options is what happens to advertising. Because now, you know, there's not just on this one channel so many minutes of advertising available. So it's a scarcity, right? we're in the opposite of that. There's so many advertising opportunities. What do you do?
And that's a huge part of the market share.
What's that?
I was just going to say that's a huge thing because the advertising dollars, at least classically, drove content production. Mm-hmm. Like you say, now it's not as expensive. It's more access. But from the end of the producer, it'd be like the television station, they've mm-hmm. got to be seeing a hit on these things.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. But the interesting thing to me is, and again, this is all just, I'm just sitting back watching, is now all the streaming services have tiered out to where if you don't want to pay that much, you get advertising. Netflix has advertising. Amazon has advertising. The only one that I think Apple and Disney and HBO Max or whatever they're calling it now doesn't have advertising yet. But all of the kind of more main ones like Netflix and Amazon, they have an advertising tier. Hulu always has had an advertising tier. They were kind of out front with that. But all those were kind of like, so now you get all your advertising on the streaming services. And I'm sure you probably have Amazon Prime. And if you're watching Amazon Prime and the things come up, now there's interactive ads, right? So you click if you have a Fire Stick, you click the button on your Fire Stick and you get an email with information from whatever the vendor is, right? So they get automatic feedback. I've seen more and more this year of these ads where if you watch the ad, you get a credit to Amazon. And to me, that's all very fascinating because it's kind of the age of interactive advertising on a level that's never been attained before. They've always tried it, but it's never been as easy as it is today, right? So the Fire Stick alone or Roku, those things are amazing in their ability then to access the consumer directly.
An interesting footnote on that. So my other hat, I'm a software developer and our company does do some advertising. And I noticed about a year and a half ago is when this switched, that you went to the local television station like you always would have. And all of a sudden the package includes things like Pluto and some of these other services that are out there, like you just mentioned, mm-hmm. as a part of the thing to kind of, I guess, put everything in one package so that it still remains relevant. And then, the next question I would ask you, I don't know if you've really messed much with this, is next gen broadcast television. Mm-hmm. Now, supposedly that technology is also internet access, although I've yet to see anywhere where it's actually being used in that way. But maybe that's going to be your internet too. You just get it over the air and boy, would that hit the cable companies.
Oh yeah. And I have not got to play with that yet. So, I'll watch, see if I can, but, I haven't seen it in my, area yet. So I'm in the, Midwest in St. Louis, Missouri. So, which used to be home to Charter, which now is Spectrum, but I think it's changed hands several times, over the last few years. It used to be a Paul Allen company, which it's not anymore, but interesting times though. But I think, I don't know that that's going to be good enough, at least for the way you described it to me. I mean, you still have some limitations, I think. And then if you're already hooking up to the internet with your television, that's another, why do you need the extra piece? People watch on their phones.
Well, yeah, that's if you already have it, it works.
Yeah.
Yeah. And next gen television has the added little thing where in order to make full use of it, you have to replace the tuner in your television again. There's some backward compatibility, but not all of the latest greatest. So, it's adding higher definition, more Atmos sound, these kind of things. But at the end of the day, like you say, we already have that through other things. Are we all going to want to run out and buy a new television again? I know I don't.
Right. No. Well, I think that's the deal, right? So they were trying to push the smart TVs and so forth. And I don't really think that that's taken hold. I think that there's much more traction on the devices. So like the Apple TV, Fire TV, Roku, things of the world, because they're portable. They can go from one device to another. They're not necessarily stuck on that one device. And they're very, very easy to use. I mean, they're incredibly easy to use. And that, I think, really drives some of that. The other thing is you mentioned the high resolution. I think we're at the point, if you look at content, right, high resolution is not, I mean, everybody says they love it, but the reality is we've gotten lower resolution with, if you look at the breadth of content that's available, resolution is not the king of the situation, right? It's the content. So, I mean, people will watch TikTok videos that look like, you know, garbage and be just as entertained as they are with the latest release from, you know, the Lord of the Rings release from Amazon, which is just, you know, had so much care taken in it that it's incredible. And, but the two entertain just as equally, you know, I joke with my friends that I said, we're, you know, whenever America's Funniest Home Videos came out when we were young, it was a novelty because it was VHS videos on broadcast television. I'm like, now mm-hmm. we live in that age. The age is that is the entertainment. It's not just a show once a week. It's constant. And, yeah, and you know, the
content's easy to get, but because anybody that has a cell phone, you can shoot high definition. Yeah. You probably can shoot 4K at this point, you know?
Yeah, but they don't take any care in it. And
no,
it doesn't look great.
Well, that's where you need AI to edit for you. That'll fix everything, right?
No. But the funny thing, I also had an argument with, I'm always a big on the, landscape versus portrait. I hate portrait recording. And I'm like,
I'm on that really. Bandwagon with you 100%.
But you can't win. I mean, you just can't win. It's gone. That argument, even though we would love to keep having it, that's past. And
yeah.
And people do the portrait constantly when they shouldn't, obviously for aesthetics. But it wins out just because it's easier. And so I think that is the crux of it. Whatever is easier is where everybody's going to go. And I think that's where it's heading. And so now we have to think, what's the next way to make it easier for people? And I think that will be the winner ultimately, is just ease of use and getting what you want. Now, to me, the big thing for that is the aggregator. So I have a Fire Stick that I use all the time, and I can look up just about anything on the Fire Stick, and it will go tell me if I have it or don't have it, if I can get it or not get it, it'll search it for me. That aggregator, I think we need to have a better one, because it's not the best yet, right? Because sometimes it just comes up and it says, well, you can go to the internet or you can go to YouTube, but it doesn't really tell you where it's at. And then when you go to YouTube, then that's a whole, you know, other area. But if it's on one of the services, it will kind of tell you, especially if it's on one of the services that it can sell you the access, right? But we need an aggregator that is going to be able to find things no matter how esoteric and take you there. So that means even on YouTube, that means even on some of these other streaming platforms that are very, very, you know, not popular. I'm trying to think, there's one called Local News, I noticed, that has all these local news stations on it. But I'm just saying, stuff like that. So things that you don't think about because they're not part of like the big, we'll call it the big 10 streaming services. Cause I can't think of how many are out there. I can probably name 10 of them. And so big 10 sounds pretty good for that.
Yeah, also, I know, but you're, and by the way, your point on that, I want to just kind of highlight that there are many, many more streaming services than what you would just get on your Netflix and Hulu and whatnot. Mm-hmm. And a lot of them are actually very good, but they're not marketed, so you don't necessarily know they're there. You do have to look, like you say, but when you find them, you can really, if you say something that is a hobby you like, there's probably a streamer that just mm-hmm. does that, and so on.
Yeah,
and, the niche. Yeah. They're not expensive, and they give you that niche. Yeah, exactly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I love British television, so I'll get the BritBox for a while to watch BritBox shows, and there's Acorn, which has its own kind of niche that it fills as well. For me, the terrible thing is that they still don't even have everything. You know, there's so many more things that get kind of segmented into other streaming areas that you don't even know about. You know, that you you wouldn't even think to find. You're like, oh, I know this exists, you know, just by some happenstance, but you have no idea where it exists. And I think that that's, you know, because the success of all this streaming and so forth has been the fact that they've been able to get people to be aware of it. So, you know, I'm not admitting anything, but, you know, pirate culture was there for a reason.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Because
yeah.
you could find something available to you at the time, right? I'm going to go way back and talk about The Matrix was one of the largest pirated movies at its time when it came out.
I've heard that, yeah.
And I can remember back then when it was happening, and it was available on a very young internet at that time, at least a very, you know, young for the masses internet, and you could find it just about anywhere, right? So, but I think what happened is over time with all these services that came out and providing things for a dollar and even cheaper at the time for you know, movies and television and so forth, and then it pulling them all together into streaming services, so you pay one monthly fee for a smorgasbord, right? That's how they've captured everything. And so in order to keep that going, they need to have some type of really good aggregator, and maybe there is one and I'm just not aware of it, but a really good aggregator so you can find, you know, the long tail, as they say, for all these things to find, you know, your little piece of media history, perhaps, that you want to watch that's just not available anywhere. Give you an example. There's a show called Quark from the 80s, which was Richard Benjamin. It was a science fiction thing that came out. It was a comedy written by Buck Henry.
I vaguely remember that. Okay, yeah. That's,
yeah, there was only like
in the mind, eight, but yeah.
eight episodes or something. I can remember it. But try to find Quark, you know, and somebody wants to watch that. It was, you know, at the time it was quite funny and quirky. I'm sure that it hasn't aged very well, but, you know, those are the kind of things that we need to reach into, I think, going forward. And maybe, you know, there's got to be, maybe broadcast television somehow figures into this in some way, shape or form, but there has to be something, I think, that does a better job of bringing it all together. Amazon does a great job, but obviously they steer you towards Amazon.
You know, it's an interesting comment you make, because if next generation television really does work with an internet type connection, that could give them the two-way communication they need to be able to do some kind of, I don't know, broadcast on demand. And again, I might not be exactly on target here because I'm just starting to learn about this. But if, you know, something like that could be done, then maybe it would make it more relevant. Although I don't know if I could sit down with the Fire TV, which I already have and already know how to use, and just punch in a name, I would always do it that way. So what you're talking about is stuff that maybe isn't available, making it available through one of these other technologies.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, they've all got the voice command remotes now, right? You hit the button, you say what you want to watch, and then it does its interpolation of what you're saying, hopefully gets it right and puts it on the screen for you and says where you can get it. But I don't know. It's interesting. I don't think it's just quite it's not quite there yet for everyone. And like I said, for that kind of long tail aspect of things where people want to find these really weird and esoteric things, which there are, you know, there is interest, right? So where there's interest, then there's potential for, commerce. So it's best for them to figure that out.
Absolutely. And it's still new technology, new process. But listen, we're hitting the end of our time because we still have to fit into a time slot. That's another advantage with streaming, is you don't have that. But anyway, go ahead and tell us a little bit briefly about Static Radio and what you're doing.
Oh, sure. So Static Radio is a show that I've been doing for going on 25 years. It's an internet-only show that happens once a week. Typically, we release on Wednesday afternoons. It's a comedy show. We tell stories, hopefully funny stories. If not funny, then strange, and try to make people laugh for a little bit each week.
Sounds great. Staticradio.com. Bob, thank you so much.
Thanks for having me.
So, you know, I think in an upcoming show, we're going to want to talk about some of the different services and actually dive into these costs a little bit, because there are some solutions out there. Until next week, this is User-Friendly 2.0, keeping you safe on the cutting edge.
User-Friendly 2.0 is copyright 2013 to 2024 by User-Friendly Media Group, Incorporated. All rights reserved. Opinions expressed on the show are those of the hosts and guests and not this radio station. Please check out userfriendly.show for airtimes and podcasts.